Links Radio's update with Christian Jones.
Five o'clock, Wednesday the 11th of March. Thanks to Chris Quirk for the past couple of hours. I'm Christian Jones and welcome along to Update. 30 minutes of all the latest news, sport and travel compiled from the resources of Manx Radio's newsroom. On the way tonight, the government has published the island's updated national risk assessment for money laundering ahead of this year's Moneyval inspection. There's concern in the fishing industry over proposed visa restrictions, with fears they could affect crews and the upcoming Queenie season. And we'll hear from a young Manx chef now working in a Michelin star restaurant about his journey into the kitchen. As always, drop me a message if you want to say hello. Text WhatsApp to 166 177, email studio@manxradio.com. But first, as always, let's get the latest news headlines read by Tessa Hawley. Fastamai, Tessa.
Fastamai. The steam packet has cancelled the next four sailings due to forecast adverse weather. Tonight's 7.15 sailing from Douglas to Heysham is off, as is the return journey at 1.45 tomorrow morning. A yellow weather warning for gale force winds will be in place from 2 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Thursday. Police are warning parents not to attend educational settings on the island and be disorderly. Officers say they've had reports of people acting in a manner that's not suitable, saying parents with issues about their children which require attention should follow the appropriate channels in order to discuss them. Government wants to know your thoughts on how the island's plantations are managed. It's launched a public consultation on the future of the 50 woodlands which it manages. In international news, the UK Prime Minister was warned that giving Peter Mandelson the job as the UK's ambassador to the US posed a reputational risk. The government's released papers showing what was known about the former peer's links to Jeffrey Epstein. Sir Keir Starmer's aides claim he was lied to when he pushed Mr. Mandelson for more details of his relationship with the paedophile.
The Prime Minister is very clear that he regrets having believed the lies that Peter Mandelson put before him.
A 16-year-old boy has been arrested after a teenage girl was stabbed at a school on the outskirts of Norwich. Students were sent home from Thorpe St Andrew earlier after the school was put in lockdown. And a group of 32 countries has agreed the largest ever release of oil reserves as conflict in Iran and the Gulf states caused prices to surge. Exports have been delayed and production has been disrupted. Those are your headlines. News in full at 6 o'clock.
Tessa Gurumai, thank you very much. Let's take a look at the weather now, brought to you by Manx Gloss and Glazing. Of course, there is a yellow warning to be aware of. That's going to be coming into effect from 2 this morning overnight and through till 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, and we're expecting severe gales there. Elsewhere, dry this evening, cloud will gradually thicken, winds will gradually back southwest and increase gale force overnight. Tomorrow mostly dry but windy to start the day, outbreaks of rain developing through the morning, turning heavy at times, then clearing to showers later in the afternoon. Those gale to severe gale force winds will reach gusts of up to 50, 60, even 65 miles per hour over higher grounds and exposed coastal areas. So definitely seems like it's brawly weather.
Manx Glass and Glazing are now stocking Omnia flush sash frames. See the range at the showroom on the Stoneborough Trading Estate. You're listening to the Isle of Man's quintessential daily news and current affairs roundup. Update on Manx Radio.
4 minutes past five on Manx Radio's Update. Well, the government has today published the updated National Risk Assessment for Money Laundering, providing the most comprehensive overview to date of the threats and vulnerabilities facing the island. It confirms that the Isle of Man's overall money laundering risk remains medium high, which is consistent with the findings of the previous 2020 assessment. Well, the Justice and Home Affairs Minister, Jane Paul Wilson, says the document's publication marks an important milestone in demonstrating the effectiveness of the island's anti-money laundering, countering the financing of terrorism, countering proliferation of terrorism framework.
The national risk assessment process has been running, and in fact the terrorist financing national risk assessment was published last year, I think it was July, and there have been some sector-specific risk assessments already published. But one of the reasons this has taken more time than in the past is the sheer volume of data and our ability to analyse and really understand what is going on, not only generically, I suppose, but within each sector. And one of the benefits, I think, of that is that because of our ability now with all of the data we've got to drill into different sectors, there are some sectors actually where we can see that their risk that was perhaps graded higher in 2020, we can actually see that perhaps their risk for things like money laundering has actually reduced slightly, or their controls are operating in a way that is super effective against the threat. And there are sectors where, because of the nature of transnational crime facilitated by use of virtual assets, blockchain and other sophisticated mechanisms, those risks have actually gone up recently and are very by nature dynamic and evolving, and therefore those risks have gone up. But also, as I said before, our controls and our ability to identify and then tackle that have also gone up. So I think the whole process has been really, really thorough, but it's taken a bit more time. But the good news is the product we have out of the back of it is really helpful across all of our economy to help us understand and then continue to work hard on our regime to tackle financial crime.
That's the Justice and Home Affairs Minister Jane Paul Wilson on the new national risk assessment. And you can hear more from her and what it means for you in tomorrow's Manx Radio Breakfast programme with Ben Hartley. Now, concerns have been raised across the fishing industry about plans to introduce new visa restrictions within Manx waters. Under the proposal, crew working on UK vessels with skilled worker visas would no longer be permitted to operate within the island's 12-mile territorial zone. Industry representatives have warned the move could have significant consequences for both UK and Manx fishing operations. Dr. Lynn Gilmore from the Northern Ireland Fish Producers Organisation says the announcement came as a surprise.
We discovered a number of weeks ago, just on the 10th of February, that our vessels did not have access to Manx water if those vessels had foreign crew involved. And this really impacts the majority of our nephrops or langoustine fleets and our scallop fleet, as up to 70% of our crew in Northern Ireland are from overseas on two different visa mechanisms that are commonly used. The first one being a transit visa, and secondly, crew on UK skilled worker visas.
Well, the chief executive of the Manx Fish Producers Association, Dr. David Beard, believes the policy would be difficult to implement in practice.
Isle of Man processors rely to a certain extent on landings from UK vessels, especially queen scallops at this time of year, because there's small fishery which is available to the south of the island in our 6 to 12 mile, which is fished just by one UK scallop vessel, and that now can't land to our processors. And that was a product that they were relying on, they've sold, and we will be letting buyers down because there's no other way of catching it except for that boat. It is going to hurt us.
And William Cayley, the manager of the Isle of Man Seafoods product, says there are fears about the impact as the queenie season approaches.
As a member of the Scallop Management Board, who sits on a panel of people from every constituency in the UK, English, Ireland, Scotland and Wales, not a single person has known about this until it was brought up mid-February. And that's when you actually were first made aware, when Irish boats were told they were going to leave and not land to us anymore because new rulings have been brought into place. So since then, it's kind of been all up in the air, trying to find out what's actually changed. And obviously, it's came to light that nothing actually has changed. Something changed a couple of years ago, but was never really made clear. And everyone's kind of been just crashing on and not knowing that there was a rule changed back in 2023. This is so big for this island. We personally believe that this queenie season could be pivotal for it. Something's changed and everyone wants queenies, you know, and it's not a normal thing, but the demand for queenies this year is through the roof. So if all of a sudden we aren't in the poised position to deal with the start of this queenie season, we're missing a massive chance. Massive chance, especially seeing as we're all still struggling and trying to get back to where we were since the likes of COVID and things like that. So we really need to be able to be standing ready to hit the ground run come July the 1st, start Queenie season.
That's William Cayley, the manager of the Isle of Man Seafoods Products. Before that was Dr. David Beard from the Manx Fish Producers Association, and also Dr. Lynn Gilmore from the Northern Ireland Fish Producers Organisation. Well, Manx Radio has approached the Isle of Man Government and Immigration Service for a comment. We haven't had anything back yet, though.
You're listening to the Isle of Man's quintessential daily news and current affairs roundup. Update on Manx Radio.
5:10, it appears further bus strike action could be on the way. A third round of walkouts by drivers is scheduled to begin this Friday, lasting 4 days, with two further weekend stoppages also planned later in the month. MHKs are hoping for an update from the Infrastructure Minister Tim Crookall yesterday, but they were unable to question him yesterday after he was taken ill shortly before the House of Keys sitting. A statement read out by the departmental member, Joni Farragher, said efforts are continuing to find a fair and sustainable resolution to the dispute. John Moss has been speaking to the former Infrastructure Minister, Dr. Michelle Hayward, about the situation.
Terms and conditions have always been an important part of this dispute, and the bus drivers have been wanting to be their allied to the PSC pay scales, but they've wanted to be on the same terms and conditions as would apply to a standard PSC contract.
So the concentration should be on the conditions. We hear a level of pay increase given,
well,
but conditions,
yeah,
is the...
PSC contracts are really written around, you know, people who come into government offices and work a standard set day and a sort of 9-to-5 day. They're not really around those that have to do very early starts in the morning or work late on in the evenings or have to work at weekends. And so under standard PSC terms and conditions, you'd get extra bonus payments for those unsociable hours. Whereas if you're a bus driver, I think it's always to expected that you were going to do some early starts, some late finishes, and probably some weekend working. And when people have been taken on as bus drivers, I think that was reasonable to assume that's what they would do.
Do you think you could have solved this problem?
I think there is definitely a compromise to be had there. There needs to be some recognition of working those antisocial hours. There needs to be some give, but probably not early evening. You know, maybe if you're working after, say, 10 o'clock at night, that they're, you know, so you're doing that late shift, or if you're doing the very early 5:30 in the morning buses, there should be some consideration there. But you couldn't align it entirely with the PSC hours of work, because that just wouldn't make sense. It would cost way too much.
So you're not shouting from the sidelines, try this, Minister.
Well, I'm sure the Minister is very capable of looking at the complexities of this, and added to which, as we've heard today, there's one current bus contract and then there's two legacy contracts that are in place which have different terms and conditions in them as well. And I think somewhere along the line here you have to kind of sit there and say, well, what do we need to get as an outcome? Bus drivers are relatively well paid per hour. Do they deserve some uplift for working antisocial hours and those late nights? And you know, we know late night on a bus when you've got drunk people falling onto your bus, it's not easy a job at all. And working weekends and the impact of having a sort of shifting rota almost on family life is quite harsh. And so I think it is right that bus drivers do get some sort of recompense for that.
Former Infrastructure Minister Dr. Michelle Hayward. Now, work permits will form part of government's longer-term plan despite previous plans to scrap the system. Enterprise Minister Tim Johnston has been giving an update in this week's sitting of the House of Keys. The Department for Enterprise previously announced plans to remove the need for work permits, but put the plans on hold while a wider review of the immigration process was undertaken. Onken MHK Rob Callister has been asking the Minister whether he's still in favour of removing them.
The whole kick-off point from this, of course, was a public consultation, which very much at the time supported the idea of the removal of work permits, but not replaced with something. And the very key point here was to have a registration process in point. That is what we're still committed to, as far as that portal, that one point, whether you're coming through common travel area, whether you're coming through immigration. Clearly things have moved on since then. The Honourable Member has been vocal about that, and I accept that, and I think we all recognise the changes that have happened in the market, in the landscape, if you like, over the last 2-3 years, and it's quite right that this whole process has been looked at. and I think and work permits will form part of that longer term plan as we look ahead.
One of the big gaps in the current work permit system is the number of exemptions that exist. So there are so many exemptions. In fact, there are probably more exemptions than non-exemptions, if that makes sense. And the department obviously has no idea about these exemptions. There's no registration process. No one has to register them. Is that work ongoing? Is there a plan still in place to make sure that we don't have massive holes in work permit system where actually there are lots of jobs where you can move over here from the UK and apply for without actually having to go through a work permit process? Is the department still committed to resolving that and dealing with that loophole?
And absolutely, I recognise the issue that the Honourable has mentioned around exemptions. Now, clearly that has caused in the past a level of uncertainty. I think we do need clarity on that going forward. In principle, yes, I think we would say the removal of exemptions is something that would be part of that. But what I would say, that could well be part of looking at the SOC code more broadly within a wider policy that includes obviously immigration as well as travel area. So the principle of what you're asking is the thrust of what you're asking is correct. How that sits will be very much part of that broader policy.
Manx Radio Travel, serviced by Quayside Tyres.
Well, there's quite a lot to get through, so let's start on the roads. The Old Castletown Road is closed at the White Ho for work at the wastewater pumping station. Access to and from Douglas is via Quarter Bridge, so you can expect traffic to be very busy on the diversion routes. In Braddon, temporary lights on Cool Road near the Business Park. Also temporary lights on Braddon Road, just up from Braddon Bridge. The Benifot Road is closed for carriageway repairs, and that closure is between the Druidell Road and the Mountain Road. In Peel, we've got temporary lights at the top of Derby Road between the swimming pool and Balaquane Road. That's for gas main works. And we'll take a trip down to Castletown, where there are temporary lights between King William's College and the airport. Also temporary lights on Maloo Road near Great Meadow for wall repairs. Over at the Steam Packet, as we heard in the news with Tessa, this evening's Douglas to Heysham and the majority of tomorrow's sailings all cancelled due to the adverse weather, as we've heard severe gales. Down at the airport, on the arrivals board, the 4:50 Aer Lingus from Dublin, that's delayed until 25 past 5. The 5:45 Logan Air Birmingham, that's not due in until 6:20. And on the departures board, the 5:20 departure to Dublin, delayed, not due on the runway until 5:45.
Manx Radio Travel, driven by Quayside. Quayside, 664417. Head to Quayside Tyres and Service Centre on South Quay Industrial Estate. Quayside.
Have you got your Manx Radio Gold open and closed door sign on display? If you put the sign in the entrance of your business, you could win 3 months of free advertising on Manx Radio Gold in 2026. Need a door sign? Email sales@manxradio.com and we'll get one straight to you. And if your door sign is already up, send us a photo and we'll put your business into the prize draw. Manx Radio Gold is the perfect soundtrack for your workplace, with fewer interruptions and only the greatest hits on earth. On your smart speaker and at gold.manxradio.com.
Manx Radio Gold. You're listening to the Isle of Man's quintessential daily news and current affairs roundup. Update on Manx Radio.
Approaching 18 minutes past 5 on Manx Radio's update. Now, the political member responsible for attracting new residents to the island says government may not always be targeting the right people. Douglas Central MHK Anne Corlett, whose role at the Department for Enterprise includes responsibility for the locate strategy, says it can be difficult to identify exactly which skills the island needs most. Earlier in the current administration, government set out ambitions to grow the population to 100,000, though that target has since been downplayed. Mrs. Corlett has been speaking to Manx Radio's Phil Gorn.
I'm very much, you know, I'm Manx first. I have no aversion to protecting our own and putting our own first. But I'm not sure really that we are targeting the right place. And we've had lots of talk of immigration and abuse of the immigration system. And I just think if we're not careful and we're too open, that will be to our detriment. So obviously there's moves now to try to close down the loopholes, which should happen as soon as possible, in my opinion. As Manx people, we're always welcoming for people coming in, and we've always had to import people to do certain jobs because there aren't enough of us in the different skills to cover everything. I just think we have to be careful. I mean, the narrative has changed around the 100,000 population target now, which I absolutely think it should have, but that I don't see the point in attracting 15,000 more people on minimum wage, because that's going to cost us more than we ever gain from that. So we have to target the people that we want, and that sounds harsh, but that's the reality of it.
One of the biggest expenditure items on the in the budget, of course, is paying for pensions. And that's a big item, isn't it?
Oh, it is, absolutely. And government workforce has grown. And that was one of the targets, was to try to reduce that, which hasn't happened. What we need to do is really look at the jobs we need and the workforce that we need, and, as I say, target those areas that we can't find our own to take. We look at job numbers, and that has been cleansed to some extent, I think, but we've had duplication of job numbers between employment agencies and the job centre. So I don't think really we've had a clear indication of the number of jobs that are available. And if we're not working on facts, then we could be targeting in totally the wrong area.
Douglas Central MHK Anne Corlett, also a departmental member for the Department for Enterprise. 21 minutes past five, the chair of BALAF commissioners says the announcement that the Northern Civic Community site is temporarily closing has caused concern. Stephen Curthy claims there's been limited communication between the Department of Infrastructure and the local authorities which use NCAS. Local Democracy reporter Emma Draper has more details.
In a statement, Mr. Curthy says the board has been sent one letter regarding the future of NCAS and there has been no further correspondence or discussions. He adds that as a smaller local authority, BALAF commissioners' expectation was to be included in all the discussions regarding the future management of the site. But he claims these have primarily occurred between Ramsey commissioners and the DOI. Mr. Curthy says the board hasn't received information about who the contractor is or the terms of the contract. Ramsey commissioners' announcement yesterday confirmed that there would be a temporary closure from the 23rd of March to allow essential works to be carried out before the site is handed over to the contractor. This is anticipated to be on the 1st of April. In its statement, the commissioners also thanked the staff and their dedication, professionalism and commitment to keeping the facility running efficiently and safely. Mr. Curthy also believes that the DOI and larger local authorities are disregarding smaller local authorities, as well as the island's tax and ratepayers. He added that despite the smaller contributions from BALAF commissioners, its residents have paid into the NCAS and therefore deserve equal participation in discussions. However, he says if any discussions arise with the DOI concerning the future of NCAS, he would oppose any proposals that may negatively affect ratepayers, unless equitable representation is ensured. Mr. Curthy says he has consistently advocated for the continued management of the NCAS by local authorities, but says his confidence in DOI and Ramsey commissioners regarding this matter has diminished.
Local Democracy reporter Emma Draper with that report. Right, let's turn our attention to some good news. Careers in catering have gained far greater recognition in recent years, helped by the rise of television cookery programmes and growing interest in food and healthy eating. For one young Manx chef, that interest has led to success beyond the island. George Harris, who first trained at University College Isle of Man, is now working in a Michelin-star restaurant at the Lake District. Simon Richardson asked him what inspired him to pursue a career in the kitchen.
I took inspiration growing up from cooking inside the household. Like, at first it was sort of puddings, desserts for the classic Sunday roast around at my grandparents' house. And then from there, I sort of got into it through just washing pots as a KP at the start. When I turned 14, I could get a job. And then seeing the adrenaline of the service, like from the pots, made me want to get involved. And then bit by bit, I made my way up into the kitchen. And then from there, it just flourished.
And you trained at UCM initially. How good a grounding was that for you?
It was a good grounding. Like, you get the chance to do all the different skills that you wouldn't be able to do at the start of the kitchen. So when you first join the kitchen, you wouldn't be able to, you know, prep the meat, the more expensive products. But being at the college gives you a chance to learn those skills and also get everything down on paper. So people know that you can do that.
Now, you're working at Source Restaurant, which is within the Gilpin Hotel, for a Michelin-starred chef. How demanding is that?
It's it is a high demanding environment. I mean, you have to be on it every single second of every single day. It's high demand, high adrenaline, but that's exactly what I'm looking for in it. I mean, it's what to be expected in that level of kitchen, and it's what keeps me motivated.
It's very much, I think you touched on this earlier, an adrenaline-led business in some respects, working in a busy kitchen. It's also very hard work, isn't it?
It is. It definitely can be.
What would you call your cookery style?
It's obviously changed from place to place where I've worked, but at the moment we do sort of a Japanese take on modern classics with different flavours, whether it's like sake instead of wine with turbot, so on and so forth. But previously I've delved into a bit of Italian cooking as well, with a lot of fresh pasta, fresh tortellinis, raviolis and things like that.
Sounds great. What's your personal favourite type of food? Have you got a favourite?
I do really like Japanese cookery. I love sushi, raw fish. I just love the taste of really, really fresh fish paired with some really acidic, like citrus flavours of the Japanese style.
And what would you say to somebody who may be considering a career as a chef?
I'd say definitely go for it if that's the environment you're after. I mean, it's something exciting. It's different every day. It's high intensity. It is hard work, but if you're like me and you like that sort of thing, the high intensity, the adrenaline rush, then it's perfect. As long as you can be committed to it, then it'll never be too much work for you.
I tell you what, I'm getting really hungry listening to that. Really fancy some sushi now. George Harris, sports up next.
Get the full story. Tune in to Manx Radio's newscast for in-depth interviews behind the headlines. Find the newscast now at manxradio.com or your usual podcast provider.
Okay, let's take a look at the latest sport now, brought to you by The Print Shed. Darren Timpson's here with us. Faster My Darren, what can you tell us?
Faster My, yeah. Isle of Man TT racer Paul Jordan has extended his partnership with Jackson Racing for a third consecutive year. It comes after two successful seasons with the team, with eight top 10 finishes, including a podium in the Super Twin race last year. He'll continue on the Aprilia RS660 in the new sport bike class, while he'll also remain on board the CRB1000RR Honda Fireblade for the RST Superbike, RL360 Superstock, and Milwaukee Senior Races. However, Jordan is set to switch to the Ducati Panigale V2 machines for the Monster Energy Supersport TT races, a similar machine to that used by Michael Dunlop in his two Supersport TT victories last year. The Northern Irish rider made his debut on the mountain course in 2017 and has since gone on to record 41 race starts and 13 top 10 finishes. On the extension, Jordan says, "I've had my best results with them, so I'm looking forward to getting going for another year. The aim is to build on a strong 2025 season, and I'm hoping we can move up the ladder that bit more." In hockey, the Isle of Man Ladies Masters have progressed to the semi-finals of the England Hockey Championships on Sunday. They beat Sheffield at Liverpool University. Donna Harrison opened the scoring in the 27th minute and could have had another in the second half, but her shot went inches wide of the post. The match remained 1-0 as the Island side came home with a well-earned 1-0 victory. On to snooker, and Port St. Mary Legion claimed a seventh straight victory in the Mancrane Higher Snooker League. They beat Kew Ballers to go 1 point ahead the top of the table as Kew Zone Blinders stumbled with a defeat to Kew Zone Masters. And a design for the Isle of Man's baton at the upcoming Commonwealth Games has been chosen, but we won't get to see it until later this year. Archery star Leslie Slight's design celebrating Manx culture and heritage will feature during the King's Baton Relay in June. The brief for the design was Manx culture and heritage, however it will only be revealed in time for the King's Baton Relay in June. Leslie is an accomplished Ireland archer, crowned a world champion on two occasions and has broken 5 world and European records. Basil Bailey, president of Commonwealth Games Association of the Isle of Man, said, "We're delighted with Leslie's design and we look forward to seeing it designed baton as it makes its way around the island. It will then feature at the opening ceremony of the Games in July."
Gurumayaj, thank you very much for that, Darren. Well, that is it for Update this evening. Thanks very much to newsreader Tessa Hawley. Up next, Howard Kane with Spotlight. Chris Kinley has Greatest Hits immediately afterwards. I'll catch up with you tomorrow, same time. So until then, take care. Bye-bye for now.